Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Expanding Your Lab's Access, Leveraging Existing Contracts to Increase Covered Testing Services, Gain Provider Status with New Payers, and Negotiate More Reimbursement. The presenters are Heather Agostinelli, Vice President, Head of Specialty RCM, Shifin, Inc., San Diego, California, Clarissa Blattner, Senior Director, Revenue and Payer Optimization, Shifin Incorporated, San Diego, California, and Debbie Windsor, Strategic Partner.
I think we'll go ahead and get started. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. We're actually going to be speaking on expanding your lab's market access. It's presented by myself and my colleagues here from Xyphon. So I'll go ahead and have Heather start the introduction, and then I'll go into introduction as well as Debbie.
Okay. So I'm Heather Agostinelli. I've been with Xyphon for about 5 years. Prior to that, I was with McKesson Change Healthcare for about 24 years. That ages me, I know. I am the Vice President and Head of Specialty RCM, and I oversee the RCM for about 35 different outsourced laboratories throughout the country, most of them very large national labs, clinical or molecular and genetic-based.
And then I'm Clarissa Blattner. I'm the Senior Director for Revenue and Payer Optimization at Xyphon. I've actually been with Xyphon for 10 years now. First, I actually manage the day-to-day operations for our outsourced billing department. I'm more in a market access strategic role now, where I'm assisting prospective and existing customers with market access, payer coverage, reimbursement, and then also consulting on behalf of Xyphon.
Hi, everyone. I'm Debbie Windsor. I'm in market access. I've got over 20 years of experience just being in healthcare. So I was once a sales rep, worked with health systems, worked with hospitals. I feel like I'm illuminating right now.
Yeah.
And, I am not a paid speaker. I'm just here partnering with Xyphon just so we could share our experiences working together.
And so I just wanted to add, we're the terrific trio. if you guys know the Pet Shop Boys song, I'm going to change the words around a little bit. So they've got the brains, I've got the looks, we're going to make lots of money. Okay, so for today's agenda, we have a few things that we'll be talking about. So why invest in market access is crucial to success. I think, you know, we all agree upon the fact that market access is 100% an important asset to any lab or any healthcare provider, because of the fact that there's so many things that are involved with trying to get in network, understanding medical policy, and understanding claim submission and requirements. Why market access team and RCM need to be in lockstep. So we're going to talk a lot about collaboration. And it's not just collaboration within market access and RCM, but also with your financial team, with your sales team, and just kind of the overall perspective of the whole dynamics of your company. Tools to solidify market access and payer coverage. Again, important in market access is the fact that you really have to understand payer coverage determinations, medical policies, so that when you are submitting claims to the payer, you do have the requirements from a clinical indications, diagnosis information in order to submit that claim to meet medical necessity. How your RCM solution outsource services provider can help. And that's kind of where we come in for Xyphon. And Xyphon recommended best practices for market access. And then we'll also have a little bit of Q&A afterwards. So when we talk about market access, we kind of throw that into three core pillars. So network access, being able to go into a payer, try to negotiate being contracted. I know many of our customers at Xyphon are non-contracted, so you'll see a lot of times we are, you know, recommending them because of the fact that they are not contracted. They may not have coverage for their test or service, and so many of our customers will actually submit claims. They will either get denied or a request for for medical records or additional information. And after that, we will then try to appeal on their behalf. So a lot of times we work with them on claims requirements, understanding coverage policies from each commercial payer, as well as a Medicare LCD or NCDs, and then also walking them through a strategic appeals process. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little later. I did talk about medical policy, so it is important to ensure that you understand medical policies, because that's what actually provides you insight on the clinical indications, methodology, and so forth of when a test can be covered with commercial payers and with Medicare payers as well. And then claim requirements, really, really important to know claim requirements, because there are so many nuances with different insurance plans. You can have Medicare saying that they need a G-code for a surgical prostate biopsy, whereas with maybe a commercial payer, they're asking for a regular CPT code of 80305. So you want to make sure that you really, really understand the requirements of every single payer, because it differs from payer to payer.
So this is like, this is my favorite slide. So can someone just like look at this slide and like maybe share a thought or two? Like what do you think when you see this slide? It's very, I'm sorry?
Convoluted.
It's busy. Okay. This is off, so I don't know why I keep illuminating in this room, but I am. So this slide is my favorite slide, because in the center of it, of all the crazy, is RCM. So for market access, this is very important. RCM touches so many pieces that it's so important for us to be fluid. So market access and RCM need to work together, because market access understands the contracting. RCM knows everything behind what's being adjudicated. It tells a story.
And I think for the Zyphon people that are here, we're probably in the center, and we have a chaotic world, if you don't agree with that.
Well, and I think, and that actually, and I'll chat in 1 second on the next slide, but I think what that also does is it shows you the complexity of RCM and the complexity of market access and why they have to be in lockstep as well. But it is confusing, because you're dealing with payers, you're dealing with patient, you're dealing with referrals, referring offices, and things of that nature. So I know she loves that slide. That slide gives me, like, angst, actually, but that's just me.
So I think we're all familiar with common challenges for diagnostic providers. I think this is not just in the lab industry, but across all healthcare providers. So when it comes to claims submission, so 35% of diagnostic procedures have errors that need corrections before referring providers can actually be reimbursed. So when we talk about that 35%, from a lab industry provider, we're looking at missing billing information, missing patient demographics, diagnosis information. Also, when you look at local coverage determinations or medical policies, you're also looking at diagnosis codes that may not meet medical necessity based on medical policies. And what's interesting is 65% of denied claims never get corrected or resubmitted. So there's a lot of providers out there that once they have some type of front-end rejection or denial or missing billing information, they're not actually correcting the information and resubmitting it to the payer. So with third-party payers, and again, I would say with Medicare as well, there's a lot of rules and regulations. They're constantly updating information. Some are published and some are not. So a lot of times, if it's not published, or maybe let's take a step back, is maybe you don't get the information that you need in a timely manner, or you get a denial, you'll see things on the back end, but you have to really be able to monitor through data analysis and looking at your RCM information in order to capture those payer behavior trends. also, you know, with the industry and where it's at now, there's a lot of, you know, challenges with prior authorization. So there's many molecular tests that require prior authorization. Many of the tests that are being performed on the molecular space, too, need Z code. So a Z code is required for claim submission. And we're seeing more and more commercial payers that require this as well. And then, as you know, we're seeing a lot of increase in patient responsibility. So nowadays, we have patients that are actually part of a high deductible plan. And so you're seeing that a lot of patients have a lot of patient responsibility. So in order to, you know, create a confident and trusting relationship with payers, the ordering physicians and lab providers need to have information available to them when it comes to patient responsibility. And one of the things would be a patient portal, patient estimation tool, so that they know up front what kind of financial responsibility they have. Of course, labor costs are going higher and higher, especially after COVID. We probably all know what's going on with that. And then regulatory. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on both on the federal level and the state level. You've got the False Claims Act, the No Surprises Act, which actually resulted in the Transparency Act. And so there's a lot of things going on both on the federal and state level that you need to stay abreast of and ensure that you are aware of, because there's a lot of responsibility from a state and federal perspective, but then also on the provider side as well.
So market access, this is the collaborative approach model or idea. So I don't know what everyone in this room does, but I remember early on when I was at Market Access, I was working for a large company, and one of the reps walked up to me one day and said, "Hi, what do you do here?" And I was like, "Okay, we are siloed." So the approach of working together is so important, because Clarissa just mentioned prior authorization, criteria, denials. If we don't have that collaboration and working lockstep together, how is the provider going to know how to order the test, what the criteria looks like? How does the provider know if there's any issues? So by collaboration, we take that reimbursement time and we narrow it and make it smaller. And we're more of a consultative type of approach when we're working with our providers and our internal customers, which is our sales reps. Another collaboration is with finance, because it's important for the organizations to understand what is it that that organization can prepare for if there's recruitments on the way. These are also insights that Zyphon or your RCM partner can help you with. Beyond recruitments, what about how the organization is moving? What if we're growing? This is also insightful to help while they're building out their sales team. So I hope this was helpful to understand the collaborative approach and breaking down those silos when you're working with market access.
And I just want to add to this, because before Zyphon, I actually worked at three different labs, one of them being Clarient Diagnostic Services. And it was interesting, because when I first started, I was in billing, and it was always a billing against sales for some reason, right? Because the sales reps, always promised the world, made a lot of commitments, you know, to our ordering physicians. It was kind of like, oh, just send in a requisition with the patient's name and the specimen, and that's all you need. And then from a billing side of things, I actually used to work in our exceptions area, so error processing when you talk about Zyphon. And this is where, you know, if there is missing or invalid billing information, I would actually contact ordering physicians. And unfortunately, they did not like my phone call every single day asking for information. So, you know, our sales team was very collaborative. We actually created a program in which sales and the billing department would actually meet monthly. And what I did there at Clarient was I educated our sales reps so that they really understood the billing process. And I think that was really, really crucial in the relationships that we had with our ordering physicians, because what ended up happening was they were billing experts. So they our sales reps were the face of Clariant, but they also understood the billing process. They were able to educate our ordering providers, which then were able to educate the patients. And that was really, really an important factor because it really built a trusting and confident relationship between the patient, ordering physician, and then our Clariant sales reps as well.
I mean, Clarissa, I've never had a challenge with sales reps, so I just mean that's you're going to have to fill me in on that.
Which world have you been in, Heather?
trust me. Oh, yeah. The information we get back from the field sometimes is just amazing about balance billing, and I'm like, no, this denied with a PR for the CO50. We're not balance billing anybody. But, yeah, lots of education. All right, so the next one, investing in market access is crucial. I will tell you, I have worked with, at this point, probably hundreds of laboratories in my career. I did actually start my career in market access, so I am biased. I'll be the first to tell you that. And I will say that one of the things that the biggest mistakes that I see with laboratories, especially like even startups, is the lack of investment in market access. It's almost an afterthought in some cases, and it absolutely amazes me. So it's like they bring in this ginormous C-suite and all the things, and then they say, oh, you know what? We need to get somebody in here who can get us some contracts. And I'm like, really? And they're like, who do we call? And I'm like, okay. So when you are hiring a market access level of talent, you are paying for relationships that have been cultivated, quite frankly, for decades. So if you think that Susie Q, who came out of college 4 years ago, is going to somehow land you a UHC contract, you're high. It's never going to happen. I'm just saying. It's never going to happen. So never, unless Susie Q's dad is the CEO of UnitedHealthcare. But it's never going to happen. So strategically, you are looking for somebody that really has considerable relationships and abilities to work through your very large payers. And that should be one of the top questions that you're focused on. What are the contracts you've landed? Does that laboratory have a proprietary test? As everybody knows in this room, landing a laboratory contract is
easy peasy.
Oh, it is. It's so easy. And what a lot of people don't realize is even after you've landed that contract, can you survive on the reimbursement that they're going to offer you? Because it is, you know, well below Medicare typically. I would say on average we see between 45 and 70% of the CLFS, just with the laboratories that I'm with. I would say that's an average. You know, one of the things, again, if you have a proprietary test, sometimes that's your in, which can be really positive. And then even if it just means you get a carve out of that test, it now has a relationship and then you can build from that. So just FYI, or something that has positive coverage. I mean, but again, their question is, what's special about you? Because the big boys already offer this test. So I had a lab it was interesting, was partnered, also has a radiology piece of it. And they're doing BRCA testing, and they're like, well, we need to get contracts. And I'm like, yeah, BRCA's been around for, I don't know if you know this, like 20 years. And so there's nothing special about the way you're processing this test. However, because you are affiliated with radiology, maybe we don't look at a laboratory contract. Maybe we're looking at a multi-specialty contract, and maybe that's the way you obtain some coverage. And to be quite honest, in that scenario, sometimes you can do a lot better in your negotiations. Mm-hmm. But those are the types of things that market access people will know. So from a strategic standpoint, mm-hmm. So putting over to the side that it's an afterthought when we go after market access sometimes, and that's probably the biggest mistake labs make, in my opinion. The next piece is from a strategic standpoint. Do you know how many times I get a call from my buddy, and we've worked together twice at two different laboratories, so mm-hmm. that's why we know each other very well, and they'll say, oh, you're not going to believe this. We're apparently going to offer a new test. It's going live in 2 weeks, and I just found out. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It happens constantly, guys. It happens constantly. You should be with market access lockstep. Put RCM to the side for a skinny minute. You should be engaging with market access at the sheer moment that you think that there is going to be something new coming in the way of tests. Let me give you an example. I manage the RCM for a lab that's probably, it fluctuates between the third or fourth largest nationally in the country. So Big lab. And fortunately, about 8 months ago, we had a sales rep, and this is going to be foreign, I'm sure, to everybody here, who came to the head of our laboratory and said, oh my gosh, we need to start offering this test, this PCR UTI. It is hot. We're going to get paid $660. This is incredible. We need to get on it. And everybody was all... First thing we did, and fortunately, that CEO brought in the market access team, brought in the coding team, brought in the RCM team, so we could make an informed decision. First thing we looked at was coding. The coding, we didn't agree with in the least bit, right? So first of all, they weren't coding correctly. Then I said to the sales rep, when we're talking about that $660 that everybody's going to get, are you talking about a blended rate where there's denials included, or are you talking about just when you get paid from traditional Medicare? Oh, yeah, it's just when we get paid from traditional Medicare. Okay, well, I don't know what planet you live on, but that's not that's not our world. So our world is 50% of our business is traditional Medicare in this space, but 50% of it is MA, and actually the MA continues to grow and grow. And in that world, it's most likely like 50%. So by the time we looked at the cost of the test and the actual correct coding and what we were going to get reimbursed, because we can pull that very easily within RCM when we look at those specific CPT codes, because they weren't some new special CPT code, just to be clear, we came back and said, okay, so you're going to make $23.82, and the cost of this test is $250. Now, I am not a business person, but I'm going to go out on a limb on this one and say this is probably not a good decision. And believe it or not, everybody agreed, including the sales rep. It was a miracle. So, but again, that's what happens when you collaborate with all the right people, RCM, with market access. Again, can't stress it enough. Strategy is huge in laboratory. It's huge. And market access is a very, very big component of that. When you leave them off to the wayside, you're only hurting yourself, because they're the ones who are going to be able to tell you what that reimbursement is going to look like. Is this really going to be profitable? That combined with your RCM partner, whoever that may be.
So. And Heather, I think on that particular scenario, I want to say that there was also a existing LCD. I think it was the molecular syndromic panel.
There was.
In which they would only pay, and this is Medicare specifically, would only pay for five.
That is correct. Yes. So. And because I actually brought Clarissa into it. First of all, Heather is a terrible coder. She can't code her way out of a paper bag. If I'm coding for you, we're going to jail. So I'm just saying, I've had my CPC since 1998, and I don't even know where it is at this point. And I should never code. So I brought in Clarissa.
And I keep her out of jail.
And I appreciate that. Because I don't think I would be good in jail. I'm just saying. But yes, that is correct. So it's amazing when you bring RCM and your MA team all together. We have all kinds of contacts. That's what it's, again, it's all about relationships. Yeah. Market access is all about relationships that have been cultivated time over time, and that's what you're relying on. So, all right, I will get off my soapbox and we can move to the next. All right. I'm going to take the first two. So achieving payer coverage. And I'm actually going to call out somebody in this audience, and she might kill me, but this is a great example of market access. So back in January of 2022, non-invasive prenatal testing, ACOG, came out with some recommendations, and they said, you know what, we don't think that you have to be a geriatric pregnancy over the age of 35. We don't necessarily need to look at clinical history, et cetera, and things of that nature, which was great. Some plans adopted that immediately. Aetna actually was one of them, and Amerigroup was another one. Other ones were a little bit more slow. In this particular testing, you have a very high percentage of Medicaid or Medicaid replacement plans. And for our laboratory, we were heavily centered in the New York, New Jersey area. And New York had not updated their policy since 2014. So we kind of kept waiting. And, of course, nothing was moving. So, and don't kill me, but Donna Campbell, who's in here, my friend, she literally sat on New York Medicaid. I mean, she did. She was all over them like a buzzard on a gut wagon. I mean, she was all over them. She would not relent for anything. In July of 2022, what happened? They updated their policy, and it is 100% because of her. She was relentless, and she just stayed on top of them and forced it and forced it and forced it. So, again, when you involve market access, those are the types of things. She has relationships. She knows who to call. She did not let up and eventually was victorious in July of 2022, which is actually, considering Medicaid, that's pretty fast for Medicaid, to be honest with you. They were probably just sick of dealing with her and finally said, oh, my God, we just need to get this changed, or she's just going to park it in our office. So I have to give her kudos on that. Don't kill me for embarrassing you, but you were amazing. So the next one, understanding coding requirements. This can be a tricky one. We have that large laboratory that I mentioned. We went under with a very large payer, probably the biggest there. We started to get some significant, what we call black and white correspondence. And they kept referencing our panels. So this is a clinical laboratory that I'm speaking of. And could not figure out, we were sending all the records, all the things, and the communication between us and the payer was not good. Fortunately, Market Access was able to break down some doors, and we were able to get on a phone call where they were able to say, you know what, we really just don't understand your panels. And we said, oh, that's fine. We're going to put together a 223-page document, and we're going to send it with everyone, which is exactly what we do to this day. But it solved the problem, and we do get paid. Are they sick of getting a 223-page document uploaded to their portal? They probably are. But we at least get paid, and Market Access is kind of the one who broke down that door because we were only getting so far within customer service, if you will, when RCM payers reps were calling. So I'll let you go handle the next two.
So securing reimbursement, this is working with RCM and collaborating. This helps identify whether you as a company feel that you should be in or out of network. Also, it's insightful. So working in my experience with Zyphen, where I'm looking to price a test, you know, Zyphen represents, I think, like 250 labs. When I'm questioning where should we go in on our contracted rate, it's just insightful and helpful to work with them where they can kind of give you some guidance on, yeah, that's probably the mean price. So for securing and seeking reimbursement, it's beyond just you making the decision in your company. It's also insightful to know what's going on out there as well.
That actually is a big one. That's probably one of the top requests we get when there are negotiations going on for market access. It's one of the top ways we do try to support, because we can do it at a national level. We can also do it at a regional level because we do have insight without obviously, you know, saying what labs. We can just say as a conglomerate, this is what we're seeing. But it does give you at least a template of, you know, is what they're coming with you, you know, offering you, is it even in the realm of reality? So that's a great call out.
So the last one, if there's anything, Heather was sharing about the relationships with the payers. If you're not compliant, or if you're working for a small laboratory that's a startup that's not being compliant, that puts your relationship at risk. It is critical to be compliant. I don't know how, are there new laboratories in here? Anybody new and emerging? So this is probably not new news to you. But being compliant and sharing back with the payer on how compliant you are working. So this is our turnaround time. This is what we're doing for denials. This is what we're working with your providers with. That could also help you when you're trying to negotiate prior authorization. And this was an old story. I worked with a regional payer, and it was for a BRCA test. And because we were meeting quarterly and I was able to share with them the compliance of the laboratory, we were able to get the prior authorization removed for the BRCA test. So that's just an example of staying compliant, having that relationship with the payer, and taking that strategic move and taking that relationship to another level.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about RCM data and expertise. So it's really, really important, and I mean, we've kind of talked about it throughout our conversation this morning, of the fact that RCM data is really, really important. So, you know, we try to identify payer behavior insights, trending, and prior authorization. When I talk about prior authorization, so, you know, I think there's been a few states that have passed bills in which they're working with prior authorizations for Medicare Advantage plans. And so there are certain times when a prior authorization is not required. There's nobody that's actually monitoring this at a state or federal level, so it's really up to you as the provider to monitor this with your RCM data. And so what we are seeing is that maybe there are certain tests or procedures that had required prior authorization in the past, and what some of the states are saying is, you know, some of these tests do not require prior authorization. So are we seeing, and we look at this data, are we seeing that they do not require prior authorization? Or are we, you know, are they stopping it on the front end, requiring prior authorization? Or are they actually denying it on the back end? So looking and monitoring that RCM data is really, really important so that we can hold the payer accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. Also with coverage determination support. So there's a lot of information out there when it comes to payer coverage and policies. To be honest with you, not everything's published, right? So a lot of times you're going to see denials on the back end for either medical necessity. There's remark codes where it states that, you know, they are denying because it's part of an LCD or a medical policy. And so it's important to make sure that even though you stay abreast on the front end with everything that's published, you're also looking at your RCM data on the back end, because that's kind of where you'll see there's a story, there's specific payer trending, and you need to stay abreast on the front end, but then also reviewing that information on the back end as well. Billing compliance as well, you know, making sure that any claims requirements are things that are being followed. Contract negotiations. So with contract negotiations, we at Zyphon look at payer information as far as what are payers paying at. You've got your Medicare, you know, clinical lab fee schedule. That's pretty solid. But then what are your other commercial payers paying? What are your Medicare Advantage plans paying? What's interesting is Zyphon has been working with ACLA and CCLA because of the fact that we've actually noticed that there's Medicare traditional coverage through a local coverage determination. And we're noticing now that there's Medicare Advantage plans that are not following suit. So what's happening is, you know, Medicare Advantage plans are supposed to cover the same benefits as traditional Medicare. But what we're finding out is, yes, they can require a prior authorization, but they should be covering it if there's a local coverage determination and there's a diagnosis code that supports medical necessity based on that local coverage determination. So we're actually doing an analysis of Medicare traditional versus Medicare Advantage because we are seeing a discrepancy in what Medicare Advantage plans are covering for their patient population. So again, all of that comes through the RCM data, so therefore it's important to monitor that information. Payer demographic analysis. So that's important to market access and, you know, to your sales teams as well, because of the fact that if you are trying to, you know, have new technology, you're launching a new test, there may be things that you're looking for from where the patient is located. Are they in a rural area where, you know, they're not getting services? Is that market what you want to focus on? So having that patient demographic information is also crucial to making good informed decisions on moving forward. Revenue forecasting, not going to get too much into it. Coding expertise, again, you know, are your claims being coded accurately? I know that a lot of times with labs, you're really relying on your ordering physicians to actually code your accessions and your claims, but it is important that, you know, they have a diagnosis code that supports medical necessity for the tests and services that are being performed. If there are specific LCDs or medical policies, you want to make sure that, you know, you have an RCM system that actually captures that, so you're not submitting claims with a diagnosis code that does not support medical necessity. And then data analysis and insight, I think that's kind of an overall, you know, catch-all for everything that we've actually talked about.
Okay. Payer discrepancy report. This is probably, I would guesstimate, one of the top reports that are reviewed on a monthly basis. This is leveraged a couple different ways, and especially specifically with market access as well as finance, in that it'll show where we have overpayments, which is crucial. People always think, oh, well, we're being underpaid, and that's important. I'm not saying it's not, but your overpayments can be a real problem as well. you need to be able to call that out from a reserve standpoint with finance. It's a risk, as well as, you know, a lot of times we're the MA team, the market access team will go back and work with the payer. So, for example, Health First of last year with one of my largest labs, we had, I think it was the end of January, we were running our end-of-month reporting, and our cash was through the roof, which I'm not usually going to complain about. But then when we tied it back to Health First and we looked at the discrepancy report, they were paying us three times what they should have been paying us. And so obviously we notified the payer, and it actually took them quite a while to get it turned off and fixed within their system. So we had to suspend claim submission during that time. But it was very apparent a couple different ways. But the discrepancy report, I mean, it was boom, right in your face. And again, it does obviously alert you to where you're being underpaid. And I know you have a specific story that we worked on.
So I was at a small lab, and I submitted a reconsideration for LCD. So they granted it to us, and we were the only ones that had a wider criteria set. And I met with RCM monthly, and they noticed that I was getting all these denials in from a large payer, national payer. And after investigating, we saw that they were just pulling up the old LCD and not honoring the new LCD. So that is like, just obtaining that knowledge early on before it became catastrophic was very helpful. We were able to contact the payer because it also takes time to work with the payer. So it took a couple months for us to figure out that kink. And a second example was a very large example as well. There was a payer that we found that was underpaying us a couple $1 million, and that was found on the discrepancy report. So having that relationship with the payer, there was somebody on my team. She worked very closely with the payer. I'm staring at that person. And to call out Donna again.
He's going to go after Donna after
and
this.
Then through that very, you know, it's a very, the conversation is very sticky. We were able to get a recoupment. So those are my two examples.
Like a $2 million recoupment.
Yeah.
It was pretty significant.
Yeah.
It was pretty significant.
So I actually have a question for you, Heather. Were you the one that coded the three times?
Probably.
I was. I secretly coded.
Okay, so there you go.
That's
Don't hire Heather for coding.
I'm telling you, cannot stress that enough.
Okay, so understanding payer behavior. I talked a little bit about this, you know, being able to see payer trends, whether it's on the front end or the back end, looking at denials, looking at in and out of network. I'm actually going to ask Debbie to kind of talk through this because she does have, you know, some experience with this as well from her side of things.
So because you're asking, another collaborative experience of mine was there was a report that came in that we were being denied because we were missing timely filing. And the laboratory that I was just working with is GeneDx, and sometimes the whole exome sequencing and the genome sequencing takes time when you're collecting from the patient and the baby. So because of this report, we were able to identify all the payers where we were missing the timely filing and being denied. So we were able to have a conversation and renegotiate for one of our national payers just a longer time. And being that you're coming and having the conversation with a payer where you're insightful, and this is like the critical examples that you want to bring to them, it helps to have the conversation so they're like, oh, we totally understand that. We totally get that. So that's my experience.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, this is my favorite, understanding top denials. I think anybody in market access knows exactly what those are. But yeah, I would say there's generally a lot of focus on this particular category. Specifically in the last 2 years, the CO252. I don't think I know a laboratory out there that has not been widely impacted by this request for additional information. And what we've seen with, again, some of those number one payers is, it's vague in that you're sending documentation and yet it's not sufficient. So there's not great communication. And then sometimes you'll get these pieces of black and white correspondence. At one point, my national lab, we were averaging about 6,000 pieces a week, which is an administrative burden to say the least. It was absolutely a mess. And again, the way we worked through that was through our market access team at that laboratory as well as the legal team. So it actually did have to slightly go a legal route at one point. But monitoring these specifically and any time there's a spike becomes very essential in that communication back to market access. So if you are a newer test, getting a CO55 experimental might not be a surprise to you, but letting them know, oh, it's not just Aetna that is sending that now, I'm actually seeing it with this payer and this payer and this payer, gives them visibility that they need as they navigate. Medical necessity continues to always be a challenge, the CO50. The one that is actually not up there, which is also challenging, is the CO197, which is your authorization. And just to be clear, when you get a CO197 denial, that doesn't mean that that lab did not attempt a PA. It means they weren't successful in the PA. We still have to bill the charge, and it's still going to come back with a CO197. So having the communication line with the market access team specifically centered around these ANSI denials, because these are the most problematic, I would say, especially in the genetic molecular space, is important. Now, the other thing is when you see a spike or you see a new denial enter that is not making sense. And again, first thing RCM will do is usually make calls to the payer, multiple calls, see if we can find out what in the world's going on. I would say 50% of the time we're able to navigate it. 50% of the time the person we're talking to on the other end is only able to give us very limited information, and it really does mean at that point we have to engage with the MA team because, again, they're the ones with the contacts. And I'll use an example. We started getting a CO45 with a large payer that normally is associated with a payment. And there's been a lot of misuse of the CO45 over the years, but this was actually different. And this particular payer came back and said, oh, no, we paid you on this. And we're like, oh, no, you actually didn't. So it turned out there was an issue within their system, and it ultimately resulted in, like, I think we were paid about $750,000. It only took about 2 months to resolve for this large national lab. But, again, that was where we had to leverage market access in that team. So they're kind of, again, the MA team is kind of the unsung hero. And, again, I am biased with it because that's where I started my life. But they really are the people that have to assist in navigating policy and things of that nature. So
we're going to kind of breeze by some of these slides because we only have 10 minutes left. So I will talk as fast as I can. So when it comes to your CO50s, medical necessity, and your 252s, which is requesting additional information, I've actually worked with a lot of our lab customers in which they've had pre- and post-adjudication audits. And when I talk to the auditors from the major payers, what they've noticed is that things are not documented appropriately in the patient's medical record. So a lot of assumption is that the requisition is the physician order, right? So you have the diagnosis code that states why the test was ordered. You have the order of the test. So, you know, they check off the test that's being ordered and performed. And so technically speaking, we always look at that and say it's a physician's order. Okay, that kind of supports medical necessity. It has everything that it needs. But as I talk to these auditors at the payers, they do want everything documented in the medical records. So I tried to come up with something that's simple and easy to understand. It's the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And so when you're having your ordering physicians, you know, document the patient's medical record, who is the ordering physician? So it'll be signed usually in the medical record. What test or service is being ordered, and why do they want it performed? Where is the specimen being sent? So if they are sending it to ABC lab, they want it documented in that medical record as well. The data services, when, and then how. So I know usually you don't get this information up front, but you should actually get this information, the test results, you know, after the test has been completed. So if you have a post-adjudication audit, it's always, always recommended that the ordering physician documents how the test results are being used to manage the patient care. And that's what the payers actually look for when they do post-adjudication audits. So I always want to say who, what, when, where, why, and how is what has to be documented in the medical records.
Prior authorization. I think everybody would agree this is the bane of everybody's existence. This is just something that continues and continues and is never going to go away. I remember back in the day when I was in pathology and I saw all of the PAs required for radiology, and I thought, boy, I'm glad I am not in radiology. Yeah, that was a bad decision on my part. But anyways, it's now everything and everybody has a PA. It's ridiculous. Working with a good partner, and I will say a good vendor, and that is also crucial. But prior authorization, again, needs to be lockstep with your team and your market access team. And I won't go through all the little specifics since we're short on time, but it's to ensure that that there's an understanding of where we're having prior authorization success and where we're not having prior authorization success, because conversations at that point can take place with those payers if we feel like we have a really strong ground as to why that PA should be accepted or that policy is too challenging. So, again, a very, very hot topic. A lot of data, I would say, Zyphen, for our clients, we pull monthly a lot of data as it centers around prior authorization and where the success is. To also include that even when we don't get a prior authorization and we're doing, for example, an appeal on the back end, what is the success there? But PA is, it's not going away. Every day, I would say there are new tests that are added for new payers that require, you know, new prior authorizations. So staying on top of this can be very challenging. The MA team is very good usually about, at least for the labs that I work at, is very good in sharing what they're finding from a policy standpoint, but they're not going to see everything. So we have a tendency to also do a re-review where we'll look back every 4 to 6 months and look at any CO-197 that didn't halt up front for a prior authorization as a way to obviously know if we need to add that to our seed list. Now, again, if you work with different vendors, and we do work with different vendors, they also have very buttoned-up processes that allow you to, I think, achieve a higher success on PA. So
just a little bit more on prior authorization. So, you know, they have the Gold Card program, and this is for Medicare Advantage plans. It actually exempts physicians from prior authorization requirements if 90% of the physicians' requests were approved in the preceding 12 months. There's actually about 30 states as of probably last month that have passed about 90 bills in which they have some type of prior authorization information where they're not requiring prior authorizations for Medicare Advantage plans. So Zyphen, actually, myself and our regulatory research team are trying to constantly stay abreast of this, and we're actually monitoring all of these bills with the states that are impacted so that we can work with our RCM team and also with our market access managed care teams at our customers' locations so that we can ensure that we're monitoring things on both the front end and the back end. So if there are instances where, you know, we are seeing that a prior authorization is required and it shouldn't be required, we're going to inform our customers so that they can have that conversation with the payers.
All right, increasing burden of audits. I don't know about you guys, but I will tell you that after we came out of what I call the COVID coma, I would say last year, first quarter, we have been absolutely inundated. Every lab I have has been inundated with CO252s, followed up with additional requests coming in on the back end and correspondence. Audits, and it's not just like a UHC or, I mean, it's across the board. We're actually seeing reverse audits with Humana where payments have been made and now are retracting payments back and asking for additional documentation. And then we're only seeing a certain percentage of them actually getting repaid out. And again, that is multiple, multiple laboratories. So it's an incredible administrative burden. and it is absolutely vital that as these letters come in, that you're working with market access. It's what we found to be the most tricky is, you know, we're in 2024. You expect to work off of 835s, ANSI denials, trend out ANSI denials. But there's a lot of stuff that is going in via paper correspondence, which I just think is sneaky, and I'm sure it's being done on purpose. So, but again, it's making that team aware. We're starting to see this with this or that with that, or recoupments coming back or refund requests centered around certain testing where the payer maybe didn't have policy previously but now has introduced policy and they're doing look back. So, again, definitely been a heavy burden over the last year and a half. It's again, from an administrative standpoint, it's been tough.
So just really quickly, how your RCM partner can help. So a lot of times we have customers, whether it's existing and even prospective customers, that ask us for market analysis. That usually comes through me, and what I try to do is I will capture the CPT HCPCS codes that they are interested in getting market analysis on. We can pull in data across all of our customers, and we can see reimbursement trends. We can get average reimbursement, average allowed amounts. We can get top, you know, denials, and we can kind of see things and provide that information to you so that you can make an informed decision. This information also helps when it comes to payer contracting, because you can also then see both in and out of network, with and without denials, what the average reimbursement is, so that you can approach the payer to try and negotiate the proper rates. We also do medical policy analysis. So, you know, as a coder, I can review medical policies, and I can tell you this much, is that medical policies across major payers differ greatly. So I actually had a customer that utilizes or has a proprietary test. And so you would think that all payers actually cover the same diagnosis codes. And I found that all of the five major payers, Aetna, Anthem, United, Cigna, and Humana, actually had different diagnosis codes that support medical necessity. But what I can do is I can assist with trying to obtain information from these medical policies and work with the medical director for the lab so that we can approach the payer to try to get expanded coverage for that. And then also providing coding guidance, like Heather stated earlier, is that, you know, with coding, a lot of times, you know, she'll come to me and ask me certain questions about coding when it comes to either customers that are just wanting to know if they're coding correctly and or if they're launching a new test and what it should be coded as. And so we will then kind of go back and forth with clinical information, methodology, and so forth. So we can provide that information so that you are coding accurately and compliantly. And then if you want to add anything else to that.
No, I was going to say that's a big one. We have one right now with one of our labs where there's a disagreement between the coding and market access team and sales. Imagine that. And so sometimes it's easier to bring in Clarissa for her to weigh in. And so we do that a good bit. So I leverage her coding knowledge, not mine.
I'll try not to get you guys in jail if it ever comes from me.
We appreciate that.
So I'm going to be honest with you. I am loud and proud of our payer rate transparency monitor that Xyphon has on their website. We actually have it here just outside our grand reception. And, you know, because of the fact that there's the Transparency Act, majority of the health plans are required to publish their in-network contracted rates. And so what our data scientists and engineers did was they are pulling all of this information that's published on payer websites to get the in-network rates for certain CPT codes. And we started off with just the lab segment, and we're actually pulling in medical device, IDTF, and radiology as well. And what we have captured in here is your high rate, your low rate, and your average median, so that you can then kind of see the differences in reimbursement. So we actually created this in December of 2023 because of the Transparency Act. And what we're doing is we're actually updating the information on a monthly basis. We may have just a limited number of CPT code and HCPCS codes now, but we are starting to add more and more as things progress. So this is a very, very useful tool for those of you who are trying to go out and get some contracted rates. And definitely stop by to see, because it is an interactive tool that we have outside on the grand reception area.
Clarissa, are you breaking that down by product? In the past, I used different rates for different products, commercial, Medicare, Medicaid. Are you getting into that detail at some point?
I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. Right now, it's just kind of a general.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, we're going to continue adding more and more CPT and HCPCS codes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it is commercial. Mm-hmm.
All right, and then I'll make it very quick because we're over time, but obviously best practices would be to understand the payer mix, understand your client base, understand the PA requirements for the different types of testing that you're doing. These are all things that Zyphon works with market access on. And again, meeting regularly. Market access and RCM should be lockstep. They should be absolutely lockstep and very close and have a very transparent relationship. And that's what I definitely do, at least with my client base for sure. So she's a great example of that. So, and I think that concludes us.
Yeah. Any questions? Yes.
I wanted to know your strategy where you were talking about the Medicare advantages and where they should be calling now speed for Medicare. Are you involving market access or are you doing an appeal approach? Like, how are you approaching the payers to be able to get them to understand?
So right now, what we've recommended to a lot of our customers is actually providing the Medicare Advantage plan with the coverage determination. So we have them making copies of the LCD and sending them over. As Zyphon, as we're working with CCLA and ACLA, we're providing data to ACLA, and we're going to work with them so that they can take it to the Hill on kind of a top-level approach. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Sure. So Dina had asked what we're doing as far as the Medicare Advantage discrepancies, where earlier what I said was Medicare Advantage should be covering the same services or tests that Medicare Traditional is covering. And because there's an LCD, there's certain diagnosis codes that support medical necessity. But what we're seeing is that Medicare Advantage is not paying for it. So she kind of asked us, you know, what process and steps we're taking. Mm-hmm. Any other questions before we end? Thank you all for joining us.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.